debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Week here, the week before the week of Thanksgiving, in fact, if I'm remembering right. I am, indeed. Wow, a lot going on. An awful lot going on. In fact, Beto O'Rourke says he's going to run for governor of Texas. I don't have much beyond that, but I think this is a good sign. It's a good start. We've got a lot in the program today. I want to start out with my rant today about, will you storm the Capitol in 2024 if the Republicans steal the election? You know, we may well be facing that terrible question that Trump true believers faced last year. What do you do? Winter is coming. How many lives could have been saved if Trump and his cronies didn't muzzle the experts? I'll get into that. And I've got an amazing geeky science. The early studies, early trials, these were on mice, but not humans. Is there a vaccine for dementia? This is pretty startling stuff. So a lot coming up today in the program. And of course, your calls as well. And we will get to those in a minute. But I want to start with my opening rant today from HartmanReport.com. And the title is, will you storm the Capitol if the 2024 election is stolen? And I point out, first of all, I start out by saying, you know, this is not about feeling sorry for Trump true believers, people who have believed Trump's lies. If anything, it's about calling out the Republicans and the right-wing media who continue to promote Trump's lie that he lost, that he had the election stolen from him, an election that he actually lost by 7 million votes and lost by a significant majority in the Electoral College. But Democrats tend to forget that Trump actually got 10 million more votes last year than he did 5 years ago in 2016. 10 million more votes. And that's why he's still a potent political force, both in the United States and, frankly, around the world. You see where he's violating the Logan Act and sending his former ambassador to Germany, this guy who just humiliated America in Germany, sending him off to Bosnia to do foreign policy. This is against the law. But anyhow, this is Donald Trump, right? So, I mean, I lay out this thought experiment in today's op-ed. Consider if the tables were reversed. It's 2024, and President Biden and Donald Trump just faced off in the election. Biden wins the popular vote by 10 million votes, but there's a problem with the Electoral College vote. Just like in the election of 1876, several swing states, my guess would be at the very least, what, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin? It would maybe Texas could be a swing state, particularly with Beto O'Rourke in the. But anyhow, several of these swing states submit dueling slates of electors. There's one slate of electors which reflects the actual vote in the state. Those go for Joe Biden. And then there's another slate of electors that reflect the will of the state legislatures, which are all Republican-controlled, and those go for Donald Trump. And yes, the Constitution allows this. It happened before in 1876. And therefore, neither candidate gets the 270 votes necessary to win. Now, under the 12th Amendment, as John Eastman pointed out in his memo, as Jenna Ellis pointed out in her memo, as Mark Meadows pointed out in his memo, all these are coming out now. These have all just come out in the last couple of weeks. They all point out that just like in 1876, under the 12th Amendment, if nobody hits that 270 votes, the 50% plus one electoral votes needed to win, then the election gets thrown into the House of Representatives where each state has one vote. And right now, 30 states are controlled by Republicans. And the state makes, it's the state that decides how that one vote goes, the state legislature. The governor has no say in it. So you've got a state legislature in Michigan, for example, that's controlled by Republicans, even though you've got a Democratic governor, same in Wisconsin. Those state legislatures would say, oh no, our vote goes for Trump. So the 30 states that the Republicans control say Trump won. The House of Representatives says, okay, that's it, Trump won, which is what happened in 1876, essentially. Democrats sue at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says, no, this is in the Constitution. This is fine. And, you know, Trump is going to get sworn in. And Biden calls a press conference and says, Trump and his Republican allies used a technicality in our Constitution and law to claim they won an election they very clearly lost. Americans shouldn't stand for this. And people start pouring out into the streets. And cities catch on fire. And people are being shot. What would you do? This would be, by the way, the fourth time Republicans have tried this trick. They did it in 1876, and they, by the way, they won. Sam Tilden got the majority of electoral votes and the majority of the popular vote, but Rutherford Hayes, the Republican, ended up president because the House of Representatives gave it to him. And I go through in my op-ed today over at Harbin Report, you know, it's a summary, but basically it lays out exactly how that happened. They did this again in 2000. In 2000, you'll recall, the BBC was reporting in February of 2001, you know, a month after George W. Bush was sworn in, that they had found that Jeb Bush and George Bush, the governors of Florida and Texas, had colluded to throw at least 22,000 black Floridians off the voter rolls because they had names similar to that of felons in Texas. And George Bush claimed to have won that election by 536 votes. But see, in 2000, the Supreme Court jumped into the case by stopping the recount that had been ordered by the Florida State Supreme Court. Something, by the way, that had never been done before. But the U.S. Supreme Court gave the White House to George W. Bush, even though Al Gore won the election. But because the Supreme Court said, oh, it's good, the media said, oh, well, it's just fine. Whereas last year, the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to go out. You know, it actually went to the Supreme Court. Donald Trump took this case to the Supreme Court and said, you know, make me president. And the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to do like we did 20 years ago. Which led us straight to January 6th, which was the second Stop the Steal rally that had been organized by Roger Stone, according to Roger Stone, the first being the Brooks Brothers riot in 2000 down in Florida. So if they do this again in 2024, this will be the fourth time that Republicans have tried it. And two out of the three times that they've done it so far, it has worked. Now, the obvious way to solve this problem is to do away with the Electoral College, which almost happened in the 1970s. We came within one vote of it. But that would require amending the Constitution, and that is not going to happen with the Republican control of the Senate or Republicans controlling the filibuster in the Senate. At the very least, we could fix the Electoral Count Act of 1877. to make it unambiguous that this scenario that I just laid out cannot happen. But, you know, we got to do something. We got to get ready for this thing. Because winter is coming, as they, you know, as they said in Game of Thrones. I mean, it's both literally and metaphorically. And Steve Bannon, as I'll get into later on in the program, basically called for this as he was arrested, or as he turned himself in. Something he desperately wanted to have happen, by the way. Steve Bannon is so happy to be a martyr. He's loving it. His profits are going to go. He's going to make an extra $1 million off being, you know, showing up in jail. Seriously.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So if the Republicans steal the election in 2024, how are you going to respond? How do you think America will respond? Mark in Valley, Washington. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Well, I'm answering your question. Would I be willing to storm the Capitol? Yes, I would. But anybody that thinks this way better understand that this time they will shoot us, because right. It'll be left-wingers storming the Capitol.
Yeah, yeah. And probably some people of color, which will radically increase the probability of our getting shot. But, you know, it also causes you to realize that the problem here is not that, you know, 70 million Americans, well, 76% of 70 million Americans told Pew, well, a representative sample in any case, you know, Pew just came out with this study. 76% of Trump voters believe that he won the election in 2020 and that Biden is an illegitimate president. So in a way, if that many people believe that, if, you know, over 7 million people believe that, deep down inside, it's amazing that there's been as little resistance as there has been. And you know, and how does that inform us as to what we should do? I just, you know, the whole thing is grim. But I think you're right. I think, you know.
I heard a statistic from on Morning Joe this morning that since January 6th, with Trump's inciting, the right-wing terrorist activity has increased tenfold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it absolutely has. It's exploded. It's exploded, and I'm sure there's more to come. And like I said, these people feel like, you know, they are justified. And what this proves is that it's not the people who believe Trump's election was stolen. It's Trump. He's lying to them, and they're believing their lies. It's Fox. They're promoting Trump's lies. It's the other television networks. It's the right-wing radio. It's the right-wing news sites that are all promoting Donald Trump's lie. And most importantly, it's the rest of the elected Republicans at the state and federal level who are continuing to go along with Trump's lie, or at the very least, refusing to push back on it. Those are the people that are responsible for this, far more than the average Joe Schmo who, and I think this is probably one of the reasons why some of the people who showed up at the Capitol are getting, you know, a week in jail kind of thing, is because they were you could argue they were the victims of Trump's lies as much as they were the, you know, the perpetrators of violence. I mean, they went nuts, but hey, if I thought that Biden had the election stolen from him, I might be inclined to go nuts too. Mark, thank you for the call. Les in Winnemucca, Nevada. Hey, Les, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you're forgetting that Kamala Harris will be the one counting the votes.
Yeah.
So she can pick whichever.
In theory. That was back in 1876, there was no vice president. And so because the vice president had died a year earlier and what's his name hadn't replaced him.
Grant. That wasn't the point I wanted to get to.
Sure.
I hate to say this because I truly believe that we need both the Republican and Democratic Party that are functioning.
I agree.
And are working on solving problems and not creating problems. And right now, the Republican Party has turned into the Nazi Party. And it's sad. I feel horrible about it.
They have put power above all else. I'll give you that. I'm not sure that they're quite where the National Socialists were in Germany in the 30s.
But I mean, they're
damn close.
Back in the right wing, that hate thing, you know, they're patting the hate thing all the time.
Yep.
So,
and their whole push in the whole idea that, you know, Jews and Democrats are drinking the blood of children. I mean, that was the Nazi, one of the big Nazi things. So, I get it, Lee. And that's where, if the anti-Trump Republicans can stage a comeback over the next 6 months during the primary season, then I'll have a lot more hope for the future of our republic. But right now, I am very concerned that, like you said, the Republican Party is just going down the Nazi routine or line, and that's where we're going to go. Les, thank you for the call. John in New York City. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Big fan.
Thank you.
So the reason why I'm calling is I had this crazy idea, and I just kind of wanted to gut check it to see if this idea has any merit. So let me just explain where I'm coming from. I think that we agree ideologically, politically, on many things. I might be a little bit to the left of you. I'm not sure.
But to your point, John.
I'm sorry. Okay. So my question was, or my idea was, that I think at this point, we're having a lot of problems. We're getting jammed up, and there are things that we can't get done politically. So I'm wondering if it's an option, especially in the light of all the mass protests that are going on, union strikes and so on, if maybe we can do something direct action. So when I say direct action, I don't mean like, a riot at the Capitol, but something like mass demonstrations, mass strikes, and that kind of thing, direct action in terms of,
A la 1960s civil rights movements.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe even more targeted, maybe not something like, imagine if, an extreme example would be like if every trucker decided not to work and there would be a disruption of the supply chain, for example.
Yeah. I think that would backfire terribly. The Republicans would love that. They would take that to the bank. Look at that. Biden can't even keep the country going. I don't think it's a good idea, frankly, John. If an election gets stolen, that would be an option. In fact, it would probably be fairly high on the option list. But I'd say right now, I wouldn't go down that road.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So also, the other thing that I wanted to lay out, this is really starting to come out now. And you'll recall a couple of weeks ago, I wrote an op-ed for Hartman Report calling for Donald Trump and his cronies, the people around him, in the White House, who downplayed the pandemic, and particularly who went out of their way to downplay the pandemic after April 7th, when it was reported, April 7th of 2020, a year ago, April 7th, when it was reported in all the major media. It was the lead story on all three television networks. It was a lead story on all the cable networks. On that day, on that one day, that African Americans were dying at a much disproportionately, massively disproportionately higher rate than were white people from COVID. Keep in mind, back at that point in time, only about 11,000 Americans had died. But nonetheless, April 7th was the turning point. And it was literally the next day that Rush Limbaugh and Tucker Carlson, actually it was literally that day, that Rush Limbaugh and Tucker Carlson and others on the right came out and said, whoa, I get, as Britt Hume said, on the Tucker Carlson show, I guess this isn't as deadly as we thought. Right, because it's only killing black people. Well, and old white people, but, there's nothing you can do about that was the theory, right? So now we're finding, this is in the Washington Post. This was last Friday. the headline, and forgive my mispronunciation of her name, Messonnier, M-E-S-S-O-N-I-E-R, I'm not sure. You know, in the French, it would be Messonnier, I'm assuming, but anyhow, Messonnier. Burks and Deborah Burks detail political interference in last year's coronavirus response. And it's, you know, Dan Diamond wrote this. It's very straightforward. He writes, the Trump administration repeatedly interfered with efforts by the CDC last year to issue warnings and guidance about the evolving coronavirus pandemic. Six current and former health officials told congressional investigators in recent interviews. So now they're coming forward to Congress. Last year, you know, they've been coming forward and just laying it out. Yep. You know, Trump did not let us warn the American people, and therefore hundreds of thousands of people died who didn't need to die. One of those officials, writes Dan Diamond in the Washington Post, former CDC health expert Nancy Messonnier, warned in a February 25th, 2020 news briefing that the virus has spread. Now, keep in mind, this was February before April 7th of last year, that the virus has spread in the U.S. was inevitable. And that led to the agency's media appearances being curtailed. And then former White House coronavirus coordinator Deborah Burks confirms that and goes on to basically say it's even worse than that. Other officials, again from the Washington Post, other officials detailed why the CDC held no briefings between March 9th and May 29th, 2020, effectively muzzling the scientific agency, this is the CDC, as the coronavirus spread rapidly across the United States. He writes, the White House, this is from Kate Galatas. She was a former senior CDC communications official. She told the panel, quote, the White House repeatedly blocked the agency's media requests, including a planned April 2020 briefing. Well, of course, after April 7th, you don't say a word, right? It goes on to note, Trump appointees pressured the agency to change its regular research papers to better align with the White House's more optimistic messaging. Deborah Burks alleged that White House advisor Scott Atlas worked to curtail access to coronavirus tests last year. She says that Atlas called for excluding people who didn't have visible symptoms, even if they'd been exposed to the virus. Don't bother testing them. We only need to test people who are actually symptomatic. Right. And thus, we have the highest death rate in the world. Even though we are only 4% of the world's population, we have 750,000 plus dead Americans at the hands of Donald Trump and the Trump administration. And is there ever going to be any accountability for this? Why hasn't Congress created a select committee to look into this? Why hasn't the Justice Department, why has Merrick Garland not appointed a special prosecutor to look into crimes leading to the death of unnecessary deaths of hundreds of thousands of dead Americans? We spent years looking at four dead Americans in Benghazi. How about hundreds of thousands?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And as I said, you know, if they steal the election in 2024, what do we do? Oh, this is sad news. The Republican state senator from Alaska, Laura Reinbold, who had been banned from Alaskan Airlines for refusing to wear a mask, has now come down with COVID and is treating it, she says, with, let's see here, vitamins A, B, C, D, and quercetin and zinc citrate, vitamin E, and aspirin. And she says, I am blessed to have gotten ivermectin, the decoviter. Ay, ay, ay. Well, you know, I guess the good news is that only about 1% of people who get COVID die from it. The bad news is that as many as a third of people who get COVID end up with dementia. Maybe that's already happened here. I mean, that might account for the messaging that's coming out of her office. I don't know. But I don't mean to laugh about it. It's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. Anyhow, let's pick up your phone calls here. Morris in Long Beach, California. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Professor, look here. I heard a rumor because I wasn't there that Steve Bannon has surrendered somewhere. I'm just wondering if it's true. Does he got an orange? Does he have an orange jumpsuit?
No.
Where did he surrender? Is he in jail? Is he out on bail? Did somebody fingerprint him? You got a photo? You could email, text me, or something like that.
It's at the top of all the news sites, Morris. Steve Bannon has been desperately trying to get back in the limelight. He very much wanted to get himself arrested. It's why he defied Congress. He wants to be a martyr. You know, I mean, if he's convicted of this, he's looking at 30 days to a year in jail. It'll probably be a 30-day sentence. That's if he's convicted. I mean, the last time there was a trial for defying Congress, for contempt of Congress, was in the 1980s. It was one of Reagan's Department of Interior people, as I recall, maybe EPA, one or the other. Who was supposed to testify about Superfund sites and how they were being, you know, how the big corporations were basically getting off the hook, how Reagan was letting them off the hook. She refused to testify, ended up winning in her trial, so never went to jail. But, you know, he showed up, he turned himself in, he posted bail, and he's out again. And as he was turning himself in, he was live streaming it. I mean, this is his moment in the sun. This is exactly what he wanted.
I don't see how you post bail on a scenario like that, but I'm not a lawyer. But I want to tell you this. You know, I don't want to disagree with you too out, Landesley Professor, but he could have made more money if he'd gone to Mar-a-Lago, said he's going to resist the subpoena, and the governor is going to, I mean, of course, at the end.
He is resisting the subpoena. That's why he was arrested.
And I'm talking about not even being, when they go to pick him up down in Mar-a-Lago, he just ignore the whole process. Ignore the whole process.
You're talking Bannon? Bannon's up in D.C., I think.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a different location, my brother. Yeah. I'm talking about being down in Florida where DeSantis is the governor and Donald Trump has got
But this is a federal charge. This is the feds. So the state doesn't pretty much matter because there's no state government involved in this. But
How do you get out on bail on that? I'm serious. I'm not trying to be silly. I read a little bit. How do you post bail on something like that?
It's contempt of Congress. It's not, you know, killing three people with a AK-47. Of course, then you get, you know, water given to you by the police.
Now, when is he supposed to show up? Suppose he don't show up the next time. When is he supposed to show up before?
Oh, he's going to show up. You know, he's going to show up. You know, like I said, this is now the Bannon show. He is loving this. Morris, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Tony in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom. Love your show. Love you. Thanks for being on the air.
Thank you.
I just have a hypothetical question for you. Looking back at the last 5 years, it just drives me crazy how this country's gone so crazy. But a hypothetical question. Back in 1934, 35, 36, what would the Jews have done in hindsight, looking back at this, in 1936, when Hitler was coming into power?
You're talking the German Jews?
Yes. What would they have done?
Well, there was a huge exodus out of Germany. I mean, the USS Liberty was a huge ship that was filled with Jews who were fleeing Germany, and Roosevelt turned them away from our shores, which was probably the darkest moment, one of the darkest moments in our history of World War II. And there was resistance. I mean, you know, it's...
Yeah, I know, but don't you think the outcome would have been different in hindsight? They knew the destruction and evil that would come from this man.
Yeah, but you never know what the future is going to hold. I mean, we don't even know
I don't.
It's I know, at least now we have the example of the 30s in Europe to inform us, or the 70s in Chile. Or what's going on right now in Turkey or in the Philippines or in India or in Hungary or in Poland. We can look at these things, but I'm with you. Tony, thank you for the call. George in Los Angeles. Hey, George, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Hey, it seems to me there's like one thing that could nail Trump and that any decent Republican, if they have any decency, couldn't argue with. And it's driving me nuts because nobody keeps bringing it up. And it's Trump called for the murder of terrorist families. He's on Fox. He's on record. I heard it with my own ears.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
He says, oh, terrorists, they're fanatics. They don't care about their own lives. We need to take out their families because they care about their families.
This was during the election, during the 2016 election, as I recall.
Yes, and so it's just like, we're too damn nice. That's right. Nazi. That's a psychopath. It's a psychopath. Why are we screaming this over and over?
Why didn't we figure it out in 2016? Yeah, and why didn't the media make a bigger deal about it? Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, item number one out of, you know, what, 1,000 times that Trump told us who he was and that we simply refused to believe it. I'm with you, George. It's terrible. Will, thank you for the call, by the way. Will in Broomfield, Colorado. Hey, Will, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I think you touched on it a little bit a few minutes ago about what to expect from the Republicans and the kind of the model for a fascist state that we could look down the road at. And you mentioned earlier the 30s fascist model, but I think we need to look a lot more closely at the model that you mentioned with Chile and Argentina. And one big reason for that, and this is a big picture, this is tying everything together, kind of doctrine as far as Republican policies go. I'm going to say two words, shock doctrine.
Oh, yeah. Naomi Klein laid this all out.
Naomi Klein.
And I would tell you, also look at the Greek, experiment with fascism. My recollection is it was in the 70s, I think, and it lasted for like 7 years.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I'd have to go back and look at the Wikipedia page. But basically, you know, you had a functioning democracy, and a bunch of fascists basically took it over. Said, we're in charge.
And specifically triggering an economic catastrophe like what happens outlined in the fourth turning, which you've and I both discussed before, specifically to create the chaos, to create the chance for them to step in with the economic model set by Chile and Argentina.
Right.
And so if we're looking at what a fascistic state looks like for the U.S. down the road, look at Argentina and Chile and what happened.
Well, and the thing that is pushing that, what you're describing, Will, is re-embrace neoliberalism, which was, what Reagan did. And it's what Chile did. It's what Thatcher did in the U.K. It's what happened in Russia. It's what happened in Hungary. It's, it's happened in countries all around the world. And it creates massive poverty and an oligarchic class every single time. And it's what Milton Friedman and the Chicago Boys, Hayek and Mises, I mean, they were Europeans, but, the Chicago School of Economics, what they have been preaching since the 1950s. And they're still preaching it, by the way. And we have just repudiated that in the last 11 months. I mean, it's just been since January that Joe Biden has been singing the praises of anti-neoliberalism or turning away from neoliberalism policies. And he's the first president to do it since 1980. Which is a pretty big deal. So now you've got the neoliberals, the Lawrence Summerses of the world showing up on TV and coming back and say, oh, no, you can't do that. You got to do it the way we said. You got to have austerity. You can't have social spending. It's going to cause inflation. We got to have more money on the military. We got to have tax cuts for rich people. And it may well provoke it's certainly provoking a struggle in the Democratic Party right now. Because,
it's a shock doctrine scenario.
Oh, yeah, right, absolutely. US. And the Democrats who are opposing Biden's Build Back Better, they're all, deeply embracing neoliberalism. Will, I got to run. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Dennis in Covington, Louisiana, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
First time caller, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. I called just to pass this on. Had a local election Saturday. I went to go vote. I'm a year younger than you, Vietnam vet, disabled, and I've been purged from the rolls.
Seriously?
Also, I was a former voting commissioner. It's been years now, but...
When was the last time you voted, Dennis?
Last year.
So they purged you from the rolls even though you voted in the last election?
Yeah, I live right next door to the polling station.
Wow. Were you able to... I'm assuming you cast a provisional ballot, which may or may not be counted?
Yeah, I did a provisional ballot. I'm still not on the rolls, though.
Yeah, which means that ballot
won't be counted. I have to go down and do that.
Yeah, you do. You do. And you need to let all your neighbors know that they're apparently purging Democrats in Louisiana right now.
Well, I don't know any Democrats, even people I grew up with.
Yeah.
And I'm not particularly a Democrat. I'm independent.
Okay. But. Well, any idea why or how you got purged?
What they told me, and I researched it a little bit, when I got home, there's a fellow with the same name as me that passed away in August. And he lived in another city, but in the same parish or county. And I don't know.
Yeah. So now you got to show up with your... So now you got to show up with your driver's license and say, here, this is me, I'm still alive.
Well, yeah, well, I got plenty of ID. That's not a problem. It's just... It just blew my mind apart, you know. Here I was with my wife and daughter, go to vote, do my thing, and oh, you're not on the rolls.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to hear that.
That happened to 22,000 African Americans in Florida in the 2000 election because they had names that were similar to felons in Texas. I mean, that's how far Jeb Bush had to stretch to give that election to his brother.
Right. Well, I'm a white guy, so, you know, I didn't have that likely. Against
me. Yeah, yeah.
And I got a French last name.
Yeah. Well, that works in Louisiana. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, keep us up to date and let us know how it works out, okay?
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, good talking to you. Thanks for calling in. It's amazing. I mean, you know, when you go back and you look at in my rant today over at HartmanReport.com, I included at the very end of it the YouTube that of the video, the raw video that Greg Palast produced for the BBC in February of 2001, in which he goes down to Florida and confronts the election commissioner and says, okay, I got this list here that Jeb Bush paid $4 million for the names of these Texans from these felons from Texas. And all these people here in Florida that you purged off the voting rolls who just have similar names, who are not felons. And, the, you know, you want to acknowledge this, and the guy stands up and says, okay, this interview is over. That's it. And literally flees. I mean, you can watch it. It's just go to HartmanReport.com and look at today's article. Scroll down to the very bottom. And, you know, there it is. There's the YouTube thing. It's amazing. Our buddy Greg Palast, he's been on this beat for a while. So it seems that the Republican Party is splintering into two factions. Now, there's this huge overlay of white supremacy and anti-gay, anti-trans, and anti-LGBTQ, and pro-racist stuff, you know, the whole white supremacy stuff, all that kind of stuff going on. And there seems to be probably, you know, more of a consensus on those so-called issues. But what we're seeing in the Republican Party right now is the beginning, I believe, of this splintering into pro and anti-Trump factions. Steve Mnuchin is coming out and saying, yeah, I thought maybe we should use the 25th Amendment because maybe Trump was crazy. People trying to clean up their reputations, trying to purge themselves of the stink of Trump that got smeared all over them when they participated. You know, Deborah Birx coming out and saying, well, you know, I was trying to save people's lives. He just kept refusing to let me go on TV. Wouldn't let me do it. On the other hand, you've got Steve Bannon, who was just enthusiastic. And he live streamed his own surrender to the police for contempt of Congress. And not only did he live stream, but he literally said, we are taking down the Biden regime. He said, everybody watching in the war room, we're here today. He's live streaming this. Right. He said, we have the Hispanics coming on our side. Well, that's to some extent true. You now have several hundred Spanish language right-wing radio stations around the country promoting 24/7 right-wing, you know, the Spanish version of Rush Limbaugh's. He says, African-Americans are coming to our side. Trump actually picked up African-American votes between 2016 and 2020. His share, it only went up a few points, but it went up. It was almost entirely black men. And then Steve Bannon says, we're taking down the Biden regime. Really? In fact, this is, you know, and then he turns around and walks into the courthouse. And this is his shtick, is let's have an audit in all 50 states so that we can declare the election. Well, here's what Charlie Sykes said. He says, the latest indictment has not slowed Steve Bannon down. And then he quotes Bannon from his podcast. Bannon said, we're taking action, and that action is we're taking over school boards, we're taking over the Republican Party through the precinct committee strategy. Those of you, by the way, who are longtime listeners to this program will recall back in 2010 when I was playing clips on this program from the Concord, whatever it is, Concord Group, Concord Coalition, Concord something or other, on YouTube, where the host is looking right into the camera and saying, the most powerful person in America is the precinct committee chairman. And because they help, you know, and this is not true of every state, but in most states, they're the ones who determine who's going to be the primary candidate. So if we get nothing but Tea Partiers, this is the Tea Party effort to take over the Republican Party. And it worked. So anyhow, back to Steve Bannon. We're taking that action, and we're taking over school boards. We're taking over the Republican Party through the precinct committee strategy. We're taking over all the elections, and they know it. And we're going to continue that, and we're going to get to the bottom of 3 November. Now, that's the day of the election. See, Bannon and Trump are now arguing that the scandal, the big lie, was not January 6th. It was November 3rd, the day of the election. He says, and we're going to continue that, and we're going to get to the bottom of 3 November, and we're going to decertify the electors, okay? And you're going to have a constitutional crisis. Now, in my opinion, this is Steve Bannon making more millions. I mean, you know, he got busted on his build the wall thing. They had taken millions of dollars from people who thought they were helping to build a wall, and Bannon got busted. He was on the yacht of this Chinese multimillionaire billionaire, and he and his fellow companions, his partner in this actually is still being prosecuted for mail fraud, for fraud. Because they took that money and just, you know, used it for their lifestyle, right? So this is Bannon's latest scam to raise money. His podcast is now one of the most popular in America. It's making serious money for him. And the more outrageous he can get, the more agent provocateur he can become, the more often he can get his name in the headlines, the more money he makes. But this is dangerous stuff. This is genuinely dangerous stuff. And like I said earlier when I was talking with Morris, you know, we will see, I think, toward the end of the primary season, we will probably know by May or June of next year whether the Republican Party is going to reassemble itself without Trump, or whether the Republican Party is going to go full fascist and completely purge itself of the Adam Kinzingers and the Liz Cheneys and the, what is it, 11 or 13 Republicans who voted for the infrastructure bill, whether it's going to become completely the party of hate America, stop anything for, that may advantage Americans. The only kind of legislation they'll ever pass is tax cuts for rich people, and that's it. Is that going to be the future of the Republican Party, which is the direction they've been traveling since 1980? And frankly, I think it is. But we'll see. We'll see. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, hi. If I may just quickly address that caller who said, why didn't the Jews rise up? I think the presence of Jews is greatly overstated. But before the Holocaust, there were 17 million Jews in the world. Today, 70 years later, there's only 14 million Jews in the world. Yet they have a big impact. And my thought behind it is that a lot of Jews are very successful because of survival of the fittest. And
who knows?
We've been reduced so many times. By the way, of the world's major religions, the Jews are the only ones that never went to war with themselves, like the Christians and the Muslims.
At least in the modern era, yeah.
Never. Not even tribally. They never.
Oh, interesting.
Had a war against themselves, Jews against Jews.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm trying to think back through the Bible. I think you're probably right. Anyhow, Bill, that's not what you called about it.
I'm sorry. I meant to talk about the national,
popular vote? Doing away with the Electoral College is another way of saying it, Bill.
Right. Yeah, the national popular vote interstate compact.
Right. Nationalpopularvote.com.
Right. And it, we're getting there, but that would probably be the best way to get around it. And the only thing that's in play, and it should be promoted more.
I agree. So although it's probably not going to solve the problem between now and 2024, because you don't have enough Democratic states where the state legislatures are willing to go along with this. I mean, we're getting there. We're in the 190s, as I recall, but we've got to get into we got to get to 270, so we've got a ways to go.
May I just, for 10 seconds,
certainly,
mention something else? In terms of free college, why doesn't the government have an online university free? And the overhead would be cheap, and it would be great because you could get Congress people and the president to give lectures and things like that.
I think historically we've thought that online education was kind of an extension of correspondence school education. You know, back in the 19th century, you could become a doctor or a lawyer by going to correspondence school. Not so much anymore, and it was always considered inferior. But I'm guessing, Bill, to your point, that the experience of the last year and a half is causing a lot of people, you know, who did go to school online to say, well, this is viable. This is something we can do. Bill, I got to move along. Thank you for the call. Cindy in Morton Grove, Illinois. Hey, Cindy, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
So I wanted to answer the question from the end of your opening rant.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, my take on it, I've been thinking about this for weeks, is the sad reality is if our election got stolen in 2024, I don't think the Dems would turn out or do anything, because they're already not. Like, everybody that I know that was so involved and so outraged after Trump got elected in 2016 and, you know, really ruffled everybody up, they're just like, please leave me alone. I don't have a big Facebook following because I don't use it much. I have about 200 friends. But when I post a picture of what I ate yesterday, it gets dozens and dozens of likes and comments. And when I post a link to one of your rants, it gets zero interaction.
Well, I think people are increasingly afraid among friends to reveal their politics, which is a really sad commentary. But Cindy, there is this thing called the rule of the 3.5%. You can Google it. And it was hypothesized by an anthropologist, as I recall. But in any case, the hypothesis was that when 3.5% of the citizens of a country turn out in the streets, they will change policy. Now, we had more than 3.5% of Americans participate in the George Floyd being murdered by the police protests.
And
I think the verdict is still out about whether we have changed policies. Excuse me. But the fact of the matter is that police departments around the country are changing policies. We are getting body cameras. You've had a lot of cops leave. So, you know, there are exceptions to the 3.5% rule, but generally it holds, and it holds around the world. So, you know, 3.5% of Americans, let's see, you know, roughly, you know, 250 million adult Americans, let's say, 300 million adult Americans, that would be 9 million Americans turning out. I think they're estimating 17 million showed up for the BLM protests.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is by Bellew and Gutierrez. It's titled A Field Guide to White Supremacy. This is from the first chapter. Over the last few decades, two new ideas which focus on the origins, legacies, and persistence of white supremacy in the United States and other settler societies around the globe have reshaped the telling of American history. One is settler colonialism, which names and documents contact and colonization by a nation that wishes to populate the encountered land rather than, for example, extraction colonialism, in which the colonizers seek only to take wealth and resources back to their home country. The other is racial capitalism, the idea that capitalism and white supremacy had been intertwined since their inception. Settler colonial accounts of the United States study the nature of first contacts between indigenous people and European colonists. Though some of these encounters began as peaceful conquests directed by missionaries, they were always supported by force of arms, were routinely violent, and ultimately had genocidal results. Following in the wake of the Columbian voyages through the Americas, colonial settlers from Spain, England and France imposed their dominance, systematically exploiting Native Americans, demanding their labor and their bodies, driving them off of ancestral planting and hunting grounds, then declaring those grounds vacant and the rightful property of the settlers. These lies were compounded when a European colonist insisted that the Indians were culturally inferior. They were said to worship false gods and had doggedly resisted Christianization and domination, behaviors the settlers racialized as red. The natives were, quote, savages who required, quote, civilizing by their white colonial lords and ladies who claimed superiority of faith and genteel birth. Broken peace treaties and the loss of territorial sovereignty followed. Then came removal onto reservations and intentional exposure to diseases by agents of the U.S. government to quicken the vanishing of the so-called red race. For the children who survived this Holocaust, it meant separation from their parents and cultures for placement in Indian boarding schools, where they were to forget their homelands, seek an aspirational equality always denied, never fully Americans, ever natives without rights. Settler colonialism featured two prominent mechanisms of genocide, one through direct violence, the other through forced assimilation. One does not have to look too far to witness the legacies of settler colonialism still present in indigenous poverty, segregation, lapses in medical care, and victimization by predators ever intent on exploiting their natural resources without compensation. American history relies on two racial dichotomies, white-black and white-non-white, to tell the story of African slavery and colonial territorial expansion. James Madison offered one of the many possible explanations for how these distinctions were born. In 1826, by then a former president of the United States, Madison wrote the U.S. Superintendent of Indian Affairs, Thomas L. McKinney, expressing a foreign policy concern. Quote, "Next to the black race within our bosom, that of the red race on our borders is the problem most baffling to the policy of our country," end quote. African slavery was by then a long-established, rapidly growing, profitable institution. For Madison, slaves were properties of their white masters in the very, quote, bosom of the body politic and unproblematic, while Native Americans were outsiders and threats to the nation's boundaries. Two decades later, as the United States negotiated its spoils at the end of the Mexican War in 1848, John C. Calhoun rose before his Senate colleagues objecting to the incorporation of any Mexicans because they were mostly Indians. Quote, "Ours is the government of the white man, of the Caucasian race," Calhoun vaunted. The United States had never considered integrating Indian tribes. He reminded his listeners that they had been driven into the forests by force. As these quotations illustrate, this section of the guide brings together authors who combine the insights of settler colonialism with those who chronicle the history of racial capitalism, two literatures long deemed distant and distinct. Settler colonialism interrogates anew how the United States managed its foreign policy with indigenous nations. Racial capitalism reveals the relationship between slavery and development of capitalism as more before the Civil War. It posits instead that slavery's cotton production in the South fueled the industrialization of the northern cotton mills, its exports monetizing capitalism's global reach, birthing America as the quintessential exemplar of capitalism. To the present, it has continued to exploit and marginalize racial others in order to maintain white supremacy. Racial capitalism illuminates the historical lineages of our collective past and present. The book, A Field Guide to White Supremacy by Catherine Bellew and Ramon Gutierrez. A Field Guide to White Supremacy. Just a quick geeky science here, and then I'll pick up your calls. The headline is hopeful. Hopes renewed for Alzheimer's vaccine after trials reverse memory loss in mice. This is amazing stuff. What they found is that, you know, there's this beta amyloid protein in the brain that accumulates in Alzheimer's disease and basically, you know, shuts down brain function. And what they found is that this particular variation, because it's a normal protein found normally in the body and then in the brain, but the kind that causes dementia has a particular physical structure to it. It's bent over like a hairpin. And so what they did was they created a vaccine that has this protein bent that way, but inactivated, in, you know, in a way that it can't spread in the body, but it will trigger an immune response against that protein when it gets bent that way. And it's pretty amazing. Researchers in the United States and Germany were able to reverse memory loss in mice and are keen to move quickly to human trials. The vaccine trains the immune system to fight a type of sticky amyloid beta protein in the brain that accumulates in people with dementia, preventing communication between neurons. They said that the team theorized that engineering amyloid into the same hairpin shape before administering it as a vaccine would spur the body into producing antibodies to fight off that specific structure, would also allow the immune system to ignore the normal forms of the protein, which are actually needed by the body. When injected into mice, the vaccine triggered antibodies and helped to restore neuron function, increase glucose metabolism in the brain, reverse memory loss, and reduce amyloid beta plaque formation. One of the scientists running this trial said, if these results can be replicated in human clinical trials, it could be transformative. You betcha. This was published in the journal Molecular Psychiatry, and it could be a huge deal. Okay, so picking up your phone calls here. Bob in Aventura, Florida. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I listened to your little segment on amylase to sort of help for dementia. I want to find out whether is there any word out as to where they're going to have the clinical trials and how one could get on it?
No idea, but I'll tell you, if you want to look for the article, the headline is Hopes Renewed for Alzheimer's Vaccine After Trials Reverse Memory Loss in Mice. And I'm pretty sure if you put those words pretty much in that order into a search engine, it'll pop that story right up for you. So good luck, Bob. Gilbert, San Antonio. Hey, Gilbert, what's up?
Well, I wanted to mention that I think that all this critical race theory being taught in school, I'm down here in San Antonio, Texas, and I think that it's going to lead to a resegregating of the schools is what I think, especially here in Texas. I have a list of over 200 segregated schools that were created from the 1930s through the 1960s. I have a list of those right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, I mean, you know, after the Brown decision, Brown v. Board in 1954, not only did Prince George's County, Maryland, shut down all their public schools for a whole year, and large chunks of Virginia and Maryland did, but you had all these so-called Christian academies that came out of this. This was, you know, Jerry Falwell's whole business. And they were basically whites-only schools. And this is what Betsy DeVos was pitching when she was Donald Trump's Secretary of Education. Heyman in Sacramento. Hey, Heyman, what's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
I called you once before about DSA, which is divided. We're no longer the USA, United States of America. We are DSA, which is divided with red and blue states. We can't agree on anything. And so there's really no immediate solution to the problem. I think when I call you before, you ask, what do you recommend or what's on your mind about it or something, and I didn't have anything. But when you really think about it, this has been going on maybe since about 1980 when Reagan came in and Rush Limbaugh's program came from Sacramento. And you were also on the radio program here in Sacramento in the 80s. And Rush...
No, it was in the 2000s. And Limbaugh started his show in 86, as I recall. But Heyman, this has been part of America since its founding. You know, we have been divided like that. Heyman, I got to run, but thank you. Thanks for the call. I do agree. If your point was media is exacerbating these separations, I agree with you. And there is media out there that does not tell the truth, that explicitly goes out of their way to not tell the truth. I mean, look at how Fox was editing Joe Biden just a couple days ago to make it look like he was some kind of screaming racist. It's insane. And that kind of media, I think, is doing a lot of damage to this country. I do not include myself in that category. We go out of our way to be rigorous and truthful and straightforward here. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. Be good to yourself and the people around you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.